Moncrief on News Talk.
It is time for parenting. Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
Let's start off with the controversial one. My daughter is 16 and she's at the stage where she's experimenting with her image and style. The latest ask is that she wants to dye her hair. She claims that all of her friends have done it and she's the odd one out. She wants to get highlights. I'm worried they'll ruin her hair, but I also don't want to stand in the way of her self-expression. What should I do?
This is such an interesting one, Sean, because I think there's parents up and down the country that can identify with this. And behind it, I think, is something that's not stated, but is definitely inferred and I think is valid, is it's also the cost of your daughter wanting highlights and to begin having highlights. So it's not just about her self-expression, or I could sit here and quite easily say this is a very developmental thing for your daughter to do. Of course, she's experimenting with, you know, her own identity, her own look, establishing who she is, the desire to blend in with her peer group and not be the odd one out, and then putting that to you in a pester power. That's all there. It's all beautifully adolescent, actually, how she's doing it. But in terms of the I'm worried she'll ruin her hair, I think you're also worried about, and rightly so, the cost of her doing this and who's going to be paying for it. So the ruining of the hair, Sean, is way beyond my pay grade. That's like, I don't know anything about that. But I did talk to a colour expert when I saw this one, Susan Collins, and she assures me that highlights that are done with good products in a good salon with the right shampoos and masks as home maintenance will not ever damage hair. But she also said, pay attention to the costs of the process. And the best thing that this mum could do if you're going down this road is bring your daughter to a good salon, have a consultation. How often are you prepared to do this? There is a product for every price range, all of that, and make a plan. The worry she had was, what if this girl dyes her hair herself at home in order to fit in with friends, and maybe it would be better done in a salon. So that the damage could be done if she does it cheaply and herself at home rather than in the salon. But I do think, aside from all of that, this is your daughter just expressing herself, pushing for more independence and individuation, establishing she's other than you and an individual in her own right. But I think at 16, she's also old enough, Sean, to sit down and say, OK, how are we going to do this? What's your part in this? You know, when it comes to holiday time, are you going to get a job, do babysitting? Are you earning money to contribute towards your hair care? And if not, how do you think this is going to work? How many times a year can we do this, if at all? So I think cost is the non-stated, but it's the elephant in the room on this question.
Mm, yeah, indeed. And, you know, it's not a tattoo.
No, it's not. But, you know, anyone listening who does this with their hair knows maintenance is a big commitment to this kind of hair product. So it's not nothing. But it is a way of a little bit of, again, like you're saying, it's not a tattoo. It's a bit of safe experimentation, albeit a bit pricey, but it is a safe experimentation with, I wonder what I'd look like if I changed something about me that isn't a permanent tattoo. You're dead right.
Yeah.
it could be worse.
Indeed. Yeah. But who's going to pay for it? An important question. My husband and I have two daughters, 11 and 8. Our 8-year-old has had times when she's been sad and frustrated and struggled with emotion. She may be dyslexic, but has to wait until second class to be assessed. She's waiting for an assessment for ASD, but if she has, it's on the mild side of the spectrum. My difficulty is trying to manage her wanting or needing to touch her vagina. I started to notice this about 6 months ago. When she'd lie down on her belly while watching TV, she would touch herself fully clothed and wiggled her legs. I let it go a few times, I noticed, but then did have a conversation with her about what she was doing and why. She said it feels nice. We've since taken in a 14-year-old boy student for the academic year, and I really don't want her to do it in front of him. I really don't know how to deal with this, as I don't want her to feel shame, but I am worried that this is becoming something she's beginning to depend on for some sort of release. Please help me with any advice or somewhere to turn to talk about this. I did mention it to our GP, but she didn't really give me any advice. My daughter goes horse riding, karate and drumming lessons during the week, as I know she needs different outlets and activities. She's a very kind, sensitive child who feels things very deeply.
I mean, there's loads in this, Sean, that's fantastic. I mean, you're doing so much. She's on wait list for assessments. You've clearly got some questions about that. And when we think about the other behaviour that is the focus of this letter, because she's 8 years old, you know, we want to consider if there is the presence of anything, she's waiting for an assessment for autism, might some disinhibition and not being that self-conscious about her body or touching herself be a part of that, along with some impulsive or compulsive behaviours. But at the same time, it still needs to be managed, no matter what the root cause is. And that kind of self-touching is very rarely sexualized in very young children. It's more about body curiosity. And then when they explore their own bodies, they can discover a certain degree of pleasure in touching their vaginas, their penis, whatever it is, their body parts, and they can experience pleasure and they go, oh, well, I like that. And then they keep doing it. But that's still not a sexualized thing. It's more, I like how that feels and I do it. So I would be talking to her about boundaries. That's the key issue. You've done a lovely job in saying to her, oh, I've noticed you're doing this. Are you sore? Is there something going on? And her telling you, well, it feels nice. So now you talk to her about boundaries. You tell her that only she can touch her private parts of her body like that. Nobody else can touch her like that. She must do so in private, so not in shared spaces like the sitting room or when others are in the room with her. But maybe be specific about your bedroom, the bathroom, wherever you want to state. And she must wash her hands before and after and be gentle in how she touches herself so that she doesn't hurt herself. And you're talking very much about keeping her and her body safe. So you're avoiding any shame-based language with that, but you are emphasizing it's a private thing to do. And at 8 years old, we might typically expect eight-year-olds to have more self-consciousness about this themselves, because normally it's younger children you'd be saying, OK, listen, you don't do that in shared spaces. But she's letting you know that I think this is why I would say, Sean, it's not remotely sexualized. She's not self-conscious about it at all. She's just doing something that helps her to relax and it feels nice for her. So talk to her directly about it, kindly, but directly, and very clear boundaries. And then if you see her forgetting, because she's eight and she probably will forget those boundaries, that you just gently yet firmly remind her, you remember we talked about this, you don't do this in this room, here's where you go and do it. And I think gentle, firm reminders will keep her within those boundaries.
Now, is this, and because this is, we've had versions of this kind of question many times, is this something a child this age will kind of grow out of, or what's the trajectory of this?
I mean, it's not really that they grow out of it. It's more that they grow more boundaried around it. So we become less aware of them doing it, if that makes sense. You know, touching your own body and finding pleasure in touching your own body, that's a very normal developmental thing. And it's something that does linger in right through life. People continue to touch their bodies for pleasure throughout the trajectory of their lives, but they don't do it in the sitting room and they don't need to be spoken to about it, generally speaking. You know, so it's really about internalizing those boundaries. Initially, they come from outside. You know, your parent is putting that boundary in place for you. And then as you grow up, you internalize that boundary and limit within yourself, and you don't need to be reminded, because it's like having an internal brake light yourself. You know, oh, I know what I should and shouldn't do. And generally, children are around this age when they're beginning to internalize that self-regulation, those boundaries and limits. But it's not that they all have it nailed at this age. And this little one definitely just needs a little prompt or reminder about it.
Yeah. We have a really bad issue in our house that's proving hard to solve. Our dog died 2 years ago and our son took it really badly. As you can imagine, as any only child that grows up in the countryside, the dog was his best friend and it took him a long time to get over it. We weren't going to get a new dog, but after a long conversation between my wife and I, we felt that enough time had passed, and over the summer we got a new dog. Our son was delighted and it was great to see a bit of spark back in him around the house again. When we got the dog, we let him sleep in the bed with our son for the first few nights. Those few nights became weeks. Now we're in a situation where our son is refusing to go to bed without the dog being in the bed with him. We tried a few different ways to stop this, but he says he can't sleep, etc. It was a real struggle around back to school time, so we let it slide. But now I want to nip it in the bud. I think it's way more than a bud now, my friend. I know there is a huge emotional connection with this dog, so I want to handle it the right way. The thing is, when the dog is in the bed, my son sleeps way better, but I just don't want him to develop a long-term bad habit.
This is a beautiful letter of someone talking themselves in and out of their own argument as they go through it. But I was laughing as well. Like, this is not about nipping something in the bud. The bud has long bloomed. Like, you've got an established routine, an established pattern. And it's a little bit confusing for me now. Sean, you're a dog owner. I'm not a dog owner. So I'll approach this in terms of this child is clearly getting a lot of comfort from having the dog nearby. It's very co-regulating and they've grown used to this little routine around bedtime. You see, your son, for these parents, their son didn't set this sleep arrangement up. They did, you know, as parents. You allow, and then not only did you set it up, yes, this can happen for a few days, you then blurred your own boundary and you allowed those days to become weeks. And I imagine it could be weeks into months at this stage. But, you know, the dog also only knows this way of sleeping in your house. The dog knows no different than this because from the moment that dog came into your home, that's where you taught it. This is where you sleep. This is how you sleep. So it's not just breaking this habit for your son. You've also got, if you approach this, you've got to break this habit for the dog. And I don't know which of those is going to be harder for you. I don't know what kind of dog it is either, but obviously anybody would have to be very careful if it was a really small dog, you know, just like you would if you were co-sleeping in with anyone, you know, that you're putting protective factors in place that the dog isn't going to be rolled over onto or anything like that. But if you are going to look to change this, and I think you are, you went to the trouble of writing to us about it. So a gentle compromise is what I'm going to suggest here. And it would be to talk to your son and say, look, we messed up. We got this wrong. Not you or the dog. It was us. And we said the dog could sleep in your room for a few days and then we never stopped it. But we believe it would be best for you and the dog if you guys were sleeping separately. But it's a big change for you and it's on us. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to introduce a dog bed on the floor beside your bed. And the two of you can go to bed at the same time. You'll hear each other, smell each other.
Nah,
and they're not
won't work. That, as soon as your back is turned, that dog's in the bed.
But the child is going to be like, they're gone now, come on. But also, like, that's the only way, Sean, is like, and then gradually transition the dog out. But the other side of it is, you know, when they say, I don't want him to develop a long-term bad habit, that's the bit I'm really confused by or not sure about. Is it that you don't want him to be dependent on having the dog in order to go to sleep and you want him able to go to sleep himself? Because as it stands, both he and the dog are really happy. Mm. They're both sleeping well. They're both content. You even have noticed that he's perked up no end, that this dog, the introduction of this new dog into your family after the sad loss of your first dog, this has been great for him. So I just like it seems like everything is fine. So I'm always like, why are you looking to change this? It's working fine. But then I don't know what kind of dog it is or if the child has asthma or if any of those factors, maybe there's more to why you want to change it. You won't change it without your son buying into the change and working with you on it. And then the dog will be the greatest path of resistance.
Yeah, because they haven't given a reason why they don't want the dog to sleep in there. Now, unless there's some medical reason or they just don't want dog hairs on the duvet kind of thing.
And it could be that. Yeah, it could be that. But I think either way, you've got to go back to your son and take the responsibility and say you messed up with this because it is now an established routine for him and the dog.
Yeah, and they'll get... The dog will be, if they're putting the dog downstairs, if they put the dog upstairs, the dog will sneak into the room, no doubt about it. If the dog is downstairs, you're going to have crying dog scratching at the door all night long. And
then nobody is sleeping.
It's funny for the parenting slot. When we mention dogs, the texts start flooding in. The predominance seems to be the dog won't stay on the floor and that lots of people are texting to say they sleep in the dog with their in the bed with their dog every night. I know people who sleep with multiple dogs in the bed. There's hardly any room for the humans, but they're all happy out.
I think if it works for you, if this isn't a problem, then it isn't a problem. Leave it alone. But if you have, as the parent listening, go, no, there's a specific reason we need to change this, then it is going to be work no matter how you approach it. And it's your work to do.
Yeah. Which I assume they'll have to explain that to the child as well.
Absolutely.
Because that's the first thing they're going to say. I've spotted a worrying trait in my daughter. I was wondering if you could help me. She was in the park with a few of her friends over the weekend. When we arrived there, was just one other girl there. and they were playing together no problem. I wouldn't say my daughter and this girl were particularly close. Then two other girls came, and when the others came, my daughter turned to the original child she was playing with and said, "If you play with them, you can't play with me." I was shocked and told her to play with everyone. It made me remember a time where she was at a birthday party recently and asked to leave early. The girl whose party it was wouldn't play with her. When she asked to leave that party, the little girl cried and my daughter seemed to get a kick out of it. I don't think my husband and I are like this, and I'm really worried. I don't want my daughter to turn into someone like this. How do I put a stop to this, but also get an insight as to what is triggering my daughter to do this? Now, there's no age mentioned, but you can probably make a guess.
I am guessing, and it'd be interesting what you're guessing, but I'm placing this child between 5 and 8 and closer to 5, actually, as you're reading through it. But the age is key to this, actually, Sean. So it's a pity her age isn't in it. The younger a child is, the more understandable this, what you're describing, is, because friendship difficulties, you know, young kids are still learning about friendships and they can be clumsy with what are still emerging social skills. They haven't got it nailed yet. And that's what it's sounding like here. But it also sounds a little bit like, and I don't know, does this child have full attention of parents at home? In other words, are they a single child at home? But it does sound as if your daughter is struggling to share attention and is seeking to be the sole focus of the activity. Because in both examples given, you know, the friend in the park, she wanted that little friend all to herself when the other two came. And with the birthday party, she's insisting the birthday girl's focus is solely on her, or that's it, I'm going home. You know, that is something that you do want to be aware of. You know, it'd be interesting to know how she is in school and at yard time. And I'm sure parent-teacher meetings seem to be on the go at the moment in the coming weeks. So it would be really worth exploring that with the teacher and just getting a sense of how do they observe her in class and then out in the yard as well around her peer group. In terms of what's triggering it, I don't know without more information about her age and has she always been like this? Is this a change? But in terms of what you can do, she might benefit from some structured play dates where you organise a play date. And I think now a play date in its truest sense, which is 60 to 90 minutes for young children. I'd rather end play dates where they both want more of each other than at that point when they got sick of each other 20 minutes ago. But you set it up with a structured activity at the beginning. It could be that you have them painting something. You could have them baking something that then bakes while they're playing in free play, and then bring them back for a structured game as it's coming to the end of the time. So you have your little baking activity for argument's sake. They go off and play while you're sorting. They're in the oven. Buns are baking, cookies, whatever. They free play and then keep your ears focused for what's happening. Bring them back in, have them do a jigsaw together with you or a board game together, something structured. They can then decorate the little cakes or cookies. Play date's done. Other child gets to take some of those cookies or cakes home, as an example. But it's very bookended and it just stops your daughter spiraling into what seems to be a control pattern around, I'll decide what you do and how you do it. A team sport is another thing that I would strongly recommend for this child if she's not in one. And something that could be like Scouts, for example, an activity like that that is about teamwork, collaboration, working together, shared activities, turn-taking, reciprocity, you know, being flexible with changes to games and activities. Anything like that is going to help her. But so much of this one would be dependent on how old she is.
Yeah. On the first question that we had in about the eight-year-old who's waiting for an assessment for dyslexia, and the person who wrote in said she has to wait until second class. Someone texts in to say, on the child with dyslexia, the second class wait for dyslexia has changed and you can contact Dyslexia Ireland about children after Christmas from senior infants. So that sounds like a bit of positive news for
that
person. Yes,
absolutely, especially if they were going private themselves for it. But if she was trying to do it through school system, there might be quite a backlog and a wait. But it's definitely worth asking.
Joanna, thanks a million. As ever, Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.